I do need to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 1st of February, we have Alan Greenberg, Michaela Nalon, Paul Diaz, Ted Suzuki, Ron Wickersham, Barry Cobb, James Bladel, Mike O'Connor, Michael Young. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And we have apologies today from Anil George, from Mason Cole, Jeff Eckhouse, and Oliver Hope. Can I please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes? Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. All right, Marika, we have how many meetings left?
I figure my calendar at two meetings before we hit the publication deadline. The publication deadline is the 21st of March.
All right, so two meetings after this one.
Right.
Okay, then let us go ahead and see where we can make some headway. There's been a really good conversation on email this morning or this afternoon, wherever you were. Nice if we can keep that going throughout the week, but it's a good start. How about if we go through them in order and look at the things that are currently outstanding? Marika, is the version you have on Adobe the same as the last one I sent out?
This is Marika. I believe so.
Okay. Then I can use the larger one that I can actually read on my screen. I may not notice hands going up, so if someone has something to intervene, please yell out, but I'll try to keep an eye on it. All right. The first item is on recommendation number one, and the outstanding question was, should there be an exclusion for what were called SRSU domains? There was a discussion today on email where Michaela highlighted the issues, and I made a comment which caused me to think about it more than I had before. Operationally, I don't think it makes a difference, because these are not domains that will likely enter the RGP. So the real only difference is, does the back-end supplier have to gear up for something that won't happen? And chances are they'll already be doing that for other domains if they run multiple ones. And if we try to craft an exemption, we're going to have to describe the characteristics of this type of class of TLD, an endeavor which failed relatively abysmally in the VI group. My inclination is to completely ignore it. And if there's something comes up in the comment period, then we'll react to that at that point. But at this point, not try to put an exclusion in. Michaela, does that sound right to you? And I see Michael Young is now on the call. And if this recommendation is likely to cause significant problem with registries that you're aware of, maybe you could elaborate at this point if there is anything like that.
I'll let Michael go ahead. He's okay. He's more of an expert than I would be in this area.
I think the only exemption I would put in there, Alan, explicitly, is for legacy GTLDs. Because the way it's written right now, a transition period will be allowed. There are some existing models that just doesn't make sense.
Including within the non-sponsored ones? Because we are saying excluding the sponsored ones.
Are excluding it. Okay, then. I think we're okay there, but if we stay silent on it, it can always be addressed, I suppose, in the application process. But to be honest, ICANN wants to sign a consistent registry agreement, which this is already expressed as a requirement in. If I remember off the top of my head, maybe Marika, you recall the DAG 5 off the top of your head. I think that this is a requirement in the drafted registry agreement for new TLDs.
This being the RGP?
Yeah, RGP, yeah.
Oh, it wasn't originally. Maybe it is now.
I can't recall.
Okay.
Marika, do you remember?
This is Marika. I'm sorry. I'm no DAG expert, so wouldn't be able to help you out. Margie, I don't know if Margie by any chance knows the answer. No, she knows more about the DAG, but possibly other areas than that one.
All right. Well, if we're redundant with what the DAG says, we're certainly not going to hurt at this point.
Yeah, I think my only concern is I am supposed to be representing the concerns of the RYSG, and we do have at least one member that's concerned that this won't be put upon them. So I think because this refers to unsponsored, I think that's okay, but I'd be more comfortable if we had an explicit statement in here for legacy.
Okay. At one point, I had made a statement saying all of the unsponsored except name and pro had the RGP, and I think you came back saying they also had it.
They do. It's Coop that doesn't.
Okay. But
B-O-O-P?
Is that a sponsored or unsponsored?
That's what I'm trying to remember. I'd have to go back and look up their agreement.
This is Barry. It's sponsored.
I think they're sponsored, but
yeah.
I don't want to say that 100%
right. Sure. Certainly there's a comment period and an opportunity to change this. This is not cast in concrete, but it sounds like
it's
the only
issue, but
the
we can solve for that one. Yeah.
And if there's a real strong reason for unsponsored legacy ones to get an exemption or something, then we can obviously consider that, but that goes against the level playing field that we're aiming towards.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, that's fine here. Number two. Michele, you're happy at this point?
My happiness is always relative, Alan.
It's always important as well, Michele.
We do want Michele happy.
All right. Which one is the next one? All right, that's just the definition, and if anyone has any suggestions on the wording that we have right now...
I proposed cleaner language.
Okay, well, sorry. That I wasn't sure that was in relation to this one. It is.
Number three, right?
Yeah. Yes, and...
So that would be...
You had that one in a text box, I know, somewhere.
Yes, give me a second. There goes.
Yeah, I thought
no,
the
not that one.
I thought your comment was in relation to number three, the RGP one.
Right. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up here. There was another one that I suggested, simplified language. Maybe.
Yeah, it was for number three. It was the one that you had complex language last time.
Right. Yes, and then there was. There was another one around RGP. It's just around RGP.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay, the comment was that the language needs to be precise regarding which registrant is being referred to, presumably the one who is in who is prior to expiration. Okay, that was Jeff's comment, that how do we know who the registrant is? And I think the answer is we don't, but there's a presumption that the one that is the correct one prior to registration. I don't think, other than knowing what the internal record keeping of the registrar is, I don't think there's anything that I can point to. So if we specifically say the who is prior to expiration, I think that's as precise as we're going to get. And I don't think we, in fact, have any option other than that.
Alan.
Yeah, oh, Michele, sorry, I had moved
this
my
really
screen. Yes, go ahead.
I dropped off. Sorry, Alan.
Okay.
I'm just going to throw a spanner in there on that one.
Sure.
As some of you may recall, we took over the domains from another registrar at the beginning of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the data sets that was escrowed and that ICANN was able to supply to us via Iron Mountain wasn't 100% complete. So it actually was a problem. There was a situation where we thought we had a set of data which reflected a reality, and it then transpired that it didn't reflect reality. So it's, I'd be very cautious about how this is worded. Very, very, very cautious.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is essentially what is normal business practice in your business, in that there are always going to be situations where the who is not accurate because of, you know, various changes, whether it's death or corporate takeover or a web hosting company going out of business.
No, but Alan, I mean, this is much more. This is much more. It's much messier than that. I mean, you have we have a situation where, okay, the registrar that the domains were registered through ceased to exist for all intents and purposes. Okay, so they lost their accreditation. They were no longer authorized to connect into the registries. The data scrolls happen once a week, except if you've got higher volumes. So a GoDaddy or an Enom is probably scrolling practically every single day. I don't know. They might be able to tell you. Whereas a small to medium-sized registrar would only be scrolling once a week. Even with the gap of, let's just say, for hypothetically, that the registrar lost their accreditation on a Friday and the last to scroll was from, say, Tuesday, the names would have been registered in or re-registered or whatever, transferred in, God only knows, in that lapse of period. So the situation we ended up with was where we were trying to use historical whois to try and reconstruct some of the data, and it wasn't correct. I mean, we were able to resolve it because fortunately we're able to find the other talk to other registrars and, you know, share a bit of data and all that kind of thing. It's just I'm very, very wary of wording this too narrowly.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. But what I was saying was the kind of thing you're describing is not unique to expiration.
Oh, I'm sure. The thing you see, I suppose what I'm trying to get at is that, let's say, for example, if I have a bunch of domain names registered to me and I get hit by a bus, then you get into the legal thing that would be my heir, my estate, whatever, that might take over, or, you know, or corporate acquisitions and all that. This was a case of where it fell outside that completely.
Yeah, I understand. What I'm saying is there is nothing unique to expiration. So you're cautioning, saying we shouldn't have the words lock into who is so much that special cases can't be used, can't be handled.
I suppose, to paraphrase me, okay.
Okay, and I'm not sure what wording we can put in there. I think it is sufficient at this point in our process for us to put a comment on it, so that when, you know, assuming we get to the stage of trying to make policy out of this, that the policy captures the caveats you're raising. Because certainly they are relevant. There are times when whois is not going to be accurate, and that is not what we want to be used. But I don't think we can have an exhaustive list of all those cases now.
Well, Alan, the other thing as well is, if you go on the basis purely of whois, and the registrant is using a whois privacy service, proxy service, call it what you will, then by that measure, you know, then, I don't know, whatever the name of the entity being used by large registrar X would be the registrant, even though they're actually not.
And presumably, if they're being honorable, they are acting on the instructions of their client. If they're not, then that's nothing we can address.
Alan?
Yep, go ahead.
Jump in?
Sure.
Michael, unfortunately, is having a pretty tough time on the phone, but
Yeah, I'm trying to...
He posted his recommendation language into the chat, and Marika's put it in the note off on the right side. Maybe we could get back to that and see if this is close enough
but
for government work.
Guys, can I just clarify the note that you're seeing on the side? Recommendation 3 is just recommendation 3. The language you see there is the new recommendation underneath is not related to recommendation 3. It is genuinely a new recommendation altogether.
Okay.
So it's not a replacement of recommendation 3.
Thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a separate thing, and it's just, I think this is, thank you.
Thanks.
There we go.
Rick has got it now. So, Michael, since you're back on, you can run with it. I wasn't sure if you were on the phone still.
I was just trying to get a bit of air in between the voices, Mikey. I just simplified the language here. The intent is that the intent behind all this is that, you know, if a name goes into RGP, whoever originally registered the name and was using it during its active lifespan can recover it. And we assume that's non-controversial for registrars, since if they're deleting the domain, they probably have no other pertinent interest to it anyways. And this is just to stipulate or actually state that. Obviously, McCallie, if there's issues with, for whatever reason, knowing who the actual original name holder was, then that's another issue altogether. But that's a problem that could cause you grief at any number of levels, I guess, really, if you don't know who originally held the name.
Yeah, I think so. And the recommendation number 2 that we're looking at now is, in fact, an attempt to define registered name holder at expiration. And that's, McKaylee is referencing that grief that you're talking about. So the question is, if we have to define it, how do we define it? I don't think we need to solve it here, but it's something that has to be done carefully. Mikey, do you still want in?
Oh, sorry, that's left over. Are we working on number 2 or number 3?
Number 2 is what we were working on.
Okay.
Well, I thought we were on number 3.
No.
Yeah, I think part of the difficulty is that we've got people looking at different stuff.
Okay. I think we're now. If you're happy with what I've said, that is, it's something that will need to be carefully crafted, but it's not something that we need to craft carefully today. Then we can go on to number 3 if everyone's happy with that. All right, number 3. Basically, Michael has replaced it. And that's the one up in the text box, the note box right now. And I'm certainly happy with it. It's a lot shorter than it was before. Do we have any further comment on that? Or is that acceptable? I see there's a chat going on. I don't know if it's something we should be following or not.
I'm just trying to clarify. There's still a little confusion, I think, around the recommendation number 3 was I just simplified the language around it, and I put that to the list after reading people's comments. And then later, afterwards, there were not officially on this list, but there's been conversations to the list about two proposals. One was about ensuring recovery of a domain name after expiration that was put forward on behalf of the registrars by James. And then another one was about darkening the domain sometime during the after expiration, which I think, Alan, you originally put down in the email list.
That one is not in this list of proposals yet, but we'll discuss it before the end of the meeting.
So those two I wrapped into a unified proposal, and the language that Marika put up just a little while ago, that people were getting confused with recommendation 3, that's a new recommendation that hopefully wraps up a middle ground for these other elements that have been under discussion, and as far as I understand with the groups, have been kind of a bit of a stalemate.
Okay, you didn't mean 3. 3 is the one, is the RGP one.
Right.
We're now talking about the unnumbered one.
The the brand spanking new one.
Yeah, okay. And we will get to that before the end of the meeting. All right, I think on three we're satisfied with what we have. All right, on to four. This essentially says that the right to renew cannot be removed by the simple change of a WHOIS record. This is not during RGP, but not only during RGP, but a simple renewal.
So why don't we just say that, Alan?
I
was interested. What you just said, I understood.
Okay.
And I don't have an issue with. What's down there at the moment, and for transcript purposes, for those who don't recognize the Irish accent, this is Michaeli. The wording that's there, I find it's terribly convoluted. What you just said actually makes sense to me.
Okay.
I mean, it's keeping it as simple as possible would
yeah, the first phrase was there because someone had raised a point in a previous conversation. I'm trying to remember it that there was something raised that a change might be made to WHOIS that was at the explicit request of the registrar of the registrant. We'll try to dig it up, and I agree, if we can remove that first clause, that would make life a lot simpler. I don't remember why it was there, to be honest. In any case, we will go through the recording and try to recover the words I used and put them in, barring some strong rationale, and if there's a strong rationale, I'll put it on the mailing list. Is that okay? Seeing no X's and no one has their hand up, we'll go on to the next item. Recommendation number five. And this one basically says that all RAA responsibilities must be carried out either by the registrar or, at their option, delegated to a reseller. And presumably nested, if necessary. James.
Hi, Alan. James speaking. The language of this recommendation to me, and maybe we've already discussed this, as it stands on its own, I don't understand how it adds anything to the work of the Pedner Group. It seems to be it's pointing at the RAA, and it's saying something that for 2009 and beyond is already in the RAA. So I guess I'm just maybe something we've already talked about, but I guess I don't understand.
Do you want me to answer that before we go on to Michaeli, or?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I would like to hear if other registrars also maybe can help me understand what I'm missing.
Sure. Let me give my version, and then we'll go on to Michaeli or anyone else who wants to speak. For the 2009 agreement, and you said it's already there, it is not already there. There are explicit items mentioned in 3.12.3, 3.12.5, which are the reseller must do, but there are other things that are not within that domain, that are not covered by that. And this one is trying to make a global statement. The reason it's within Pedner is because one of the issues that has been discussed time and time again is a lot of these problems are because of issues with resellers. And, you know, if you look at issues like posting prices and stuff that we're talking about later, It's as Jeff pointed out, if you have a reseller market, the registrar cannot do it because the prices may vary. and therefore we're saying it's up to the reseller if the registrar chooses to delegate.
So okay, so
to make, the, make those clauses work, it has to be there. And yes, part of it was covered in the 2009 changes to the RAA. But
okay,
you know,
so a more generic question would be, does something like this, a disclaimer or a statement of, you know, scope or whatever, does something like this now have to be in every PDP final report? Because what you just said, I think, is not, if that's correct, it's not just a PEDNR issue, right? I mean, that could apply if we were passing a PDP about something else.
Well, and
yeah,
but once it goes there, it's there for everything.
You know, Alan, this clause is really a little nerve-wracking, to be honest, because it's like you said, it's almost like a sweeping contractual clause. It seems to me to be something that should be dealt with at the contractual level, not necessarily here. If we're going to make it apply to the PEDNR work, then maybe it should be reduced in scope to be specific to the PEDNR recommendations.
Oh, I have no problem if it's specific to the PEDNR recommendations, but I would think it would be clearer, cleaner to do it in general. But I'm willing to, as this, the part in it's highlighted says, I think we need to get some input on this from ICANN compliance and ICANN legal, because I'm out of my depth as what should be in this and what is, but I know certainly for the clauses that we're talking about, the new ones, if it's not passed on to the reseller, then they don't have the effect we want. Yeah.
Well, this kind of thing could tie us up in knots again for weeks and not months. I think if you're willing to narrow it toward the specific PEDNR recommendations, we have a chance of moving forward.
Okay, I think we'll have to look at that, but I'll put that on my to-do list and come back. We have a whole bunch of hands. Marika?
I'm sorry, Alan, if I could respond.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah, so just hypothetically, if this recommendation were not present in our report, we would take any consensus policy coming out of the PEDNR working group to be a part of our obligations and therefore a part of our reseller obligations. So I guess that's where I'm coming from, is seeing it as, you know, why is it here? Is it trying to plug a hole that exists or perceived to exist in the RAA, and if so, doesn't that need to go somewhere else? You know what I'm saying, is that we, when something comes out as a consensus policy, you know, our resellers don't have a choice. They get it just as much as we do. So anyway, that's just my position on that.
I agree with you 100%, but given that, I'm confused why it was felt necessary to put 3.12.3 and 3.12.5 in the 2009 RAA, which highlight those specific responsibilities, which, as you just said, and as I agree, are part of contract law and should be a given.
Well, but now that they are in there, why do we have to keep putting them back in there?
Well, because those in fact don't cover everything. They were specific parts of the responsibilities. Okay, Marika, and then Michaela and Mikey.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that I'll take this back to our legal and compliance team for some input, and I hope to have that in ahead of the next call.
Okay, thank you. Michaela?
I kind of echo what James was saying. I can understand to a point what you're trying to achieve, but I don't really think that this is the correct place to do it. The 2009 RAA introduces specifics with respect to resellers that have already been mentioned. Those of us under the 2009 RAA, which together we account for, I don't know what percentage it is these days, 80% of registrations or whatever the hell it is, are bound by certain things. In other working groups with possible, or I can't remember what the hell the thing was called, possible improvements or whatever to the RAA, yada, 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 which are two separate work groups, there was a lot of stuff there which came up with respect to resellers. And although we labored in that work, in those working groups for several months on a variety of different topics, nobody could satisfactorily even come up with a clear, meaningful, non-gameable definition of what actually constituted a reseller. To address the actual specifics of what you are trying to achieve slash avoid, it won't actually solve anything, because if I'm a dirty, filthy scumbag who is out to completely screw over registrants, all I'll do is I'll register all the domain names with my details, so ultimately I will be the de facto registrant of all the domain names, and the third-party beneficiary who is won't have any way of actually doing anything unless they go take somebody to court in a civil court. So you're back to square one. And unfortunately, I am speaking from experience in this. So, I mean, we see this kind of rubbish all the time. You know, they will register the domain names to themselves. So, you know, it's not you. This isn't actually going to solve the problem that exists. Hello?
I'm here.
Alan's line dropped.
It was just Alan. Okay, so I wasn't talking into a void.
It doesn't work. I see that Alan just got disconnected, so we'll give him a second to get back.
But he missed that. I was in full flight and everything. Oh, well.
Might have to say it again.
So, you know, while Alan's coming back in, this is Mikey.
I'm back.
Is what you're saying, Michele, that ICANN cannot make resellers abide by the consensus policies?
Well, in short, no. I mean, how can they? They've no visibility on them.
I thought there was a chain of contracts there.
Not necessarily, no. ICANN do not have a direct contract with a reseller.
Now, they can only hold the registrar accountable, who in turn can hold the reseller accountable. Is that what you're saying, Michele?
Yeah, you can hold. I mean, if ICANN compliance can contact me as the registrar of record for a domain name and say that they have received a complaint, a query, whatever the hell you want to call it, in relation to a name that is on our accreditation, which we will then have to deal with. And that's the way it is dealt with by most registrars, to the best of my knowledge. Obviously, I can't speak for them all, but there's others on this call, so I'm sure that they will be able to answer that. But ICANN as an organization has no way of seeing who would be acting as a reseller of anybody else. And one of the things that we did discuss at length in the RAA working groups was, you know, there's so many ways you could be a reseller in inverted commas, and you know, nobody would ever actually see it, because how am I meant to know that if you register 25 domain names that they're not just for you and your friends and your family? You could be reselling them to somebody else, or as happened to us recently, we discovered that some little charmer up the country was going around the place presenting invoices with our logo and everything on them, and charging registrants about 10 times what we charge.
So this is Mikey. I think I'm next in the queue. Yeah. It seems like the intent that we all have is the same, which is to make sure that whatever we come up with is transmitted to the responsibilities of resellers. And it seems to me that there are a couple of ways to do it. One, you know, Michael's suggestion that we narrow this to only apply to our recommendations is one way to go. Another would be to acknowledge this but not make it binding policy. Just make it a recommendation or a best practice, or I don't know what. But I agree with folks who say that trying to solve this issue suddenly sounds like a giant pile of work that's way beyond our scope. I wouldn't want to risk the progress we've made getting stuck on that. At the same time, I wouldn't want to lose the intent that we've got, which is to make sure that it's not just registrars, but also their resellers that play by the rules. I don't know what magical language accomplishes that, but it sounds like this language isn't quite right.
Okay, we have James next, but Marika has offered to go to legal and compliance and come back to us at the beginning of next week and tell us what their position is on this, whether they think it's appropriate here or should be done through some other way or whatever. James?
I think Mikey and Kelly and Michael covered it. You know, it's just the bottom line is it is kind of a doorway, I think, into a bigger can of worms. McKelly, to some extent, is correct that resellers are kind of off the radar, but that while that may be true, it also shouldn't matter. You know, the registry has the registrar of record, whether it is GoDaddy or, let's say, Wild West Domains. That's whose phone you need to ring when there's a problem. You know, it's understood by registrars that when they take on a reseller, they're responsible for the conduct of that reseller. So, thanks.
Okay. I think the substance of what we were trying to get at here was that making a rule for registrars, which can be blatantly ignored by a reseller, and that reduces or impacts what the potential registrant or registrant sees, is the problem we're trying to address, and how to fix it. I think we need some advice at this point, so let's put this one on hold. Five?
Well, okay, so Alan.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
You know, just in the interest of not letting something dangle forever, you know, I think what I'd like to see out of this personally is that you know, in the next few days, we actually get a feedback from, you know, from legal, ICANN's legal, and what their position is on it, and you know, we decide on an action that doesn't hold back the rest of the work. I want to emphasize that. I don't want us to be discussing this again like 2 or 3
Marika
weeks.
Marika says she'll do her best to get feedback as quickly as possible, and I'll work with Marika in the next, you know, beginning of her day tomorrow to try
totally
to make sure the question is worded such that our concerns are addressed, are relayed.
Even if that means, you know, punting it to another more appropriate place for it to be worked on, then at least we've done that, right?
Understood.
Okay.
All right. All right, I'm trying to parse this at the same time. So we're now on 6, I believe. And this is the one that says the pricing must be disclosed. The pricing for a renewal post-expiration must be disclosed. One of the issues raised was what happens if you have resellers and you're not the one setting the price, they are, and the previous item we just discussed was there to address that, and we're going to have to wait for that one to come back. There was some feeling that the language was not clear enough to make sure that it was understood. We were not setting a price, but we were talking purely about disclosure. And working group members were requested to provide additional alternative wording. I don't believe I've seen any. Is there anything else to add in this meeting? If not, then the explanatory note that will go with the recommendation will make it excruciatingly clear what we are intending to do and what we are not. And again, when this final wording of a document comes out in a policy, that's a different issue. So general agreement on that one. Number seven. This one I think we had agreement on already. There was no question. That is, if education material comes out, registrars will point to it. Changing the term auto-renew grace period to something else. And how do we suggest, there was a caution that changing the word in the RAA may not be sufficient, or, and obviously in the, you know, it would have to change in the various other contracts, but there may be EPP implications or something like that. How do we go forward on this? Marika, do you have any suggestions who we can talk to?
This is Marika. Apologies, I was just multitasking. What was the question?
Okay. The question is on the changing the auto-renew grace period terminology to something else, so that we don't have two confusing terms used, which mean very different things. And there was a concern raised that simply us changing the definition is not sufficient because of EPP implications or RFC implications,
right,
or something like that.
Right. There's actually a question I already put to our compliance and then legal team, and I haven't gotten feedback yet. And I'm sure they're very overwhelmed with all the other stuff that's going on. So I'll do my best to pass
okay.
on
so
that.
Okay. So that one stands. There's no disagreement. No disagreement, but we need to be careful about the wording and make sure it's viable. Next one was recommendation 9, which was best practice that a registrar will design and host a neutral site with educational materials. It was pointed out that this site may well be used for things other than what we're talking about here. The last issue, there was very strong support and the question about how registrars will do this. This one came out of the recommendations that James had distributed, and I guess I would ask James or any other registrar if this needs to be reworded so it's more palatable to them. I just took it verbatim, but there was a pretty well unanimous support in concept. James.
Alan, James speaking. I think that the part that was just maybe a little shaky was the idea of who would be designing the content for that. To keep it as neutral as possible and et cetera, not necessarily making it a purely a marketing pitch. I mean, we do that very well on our own, thanks. but, you know, so I think while registrars can possibly provide the infrastructure and the facilities and help publicize this, I'm not sure that the curriculum, if you will, needs to come from us. We could certainly validate anything that other groups might put together, but and fact check it. I don't think it should come from us. Personally.
All right, I have a recommendation on how to solve it, but Michele next.
Yes, Alan. The one possible solution would be the rights and responsibilities page thing when it eventually goes live, maybe just including something there.
That's pretty close to what I was going to say. I was going to say changes from a best practice recommendation to a firm recommendation that I can do this with the support of registrars and at large.
I'd support that. If you use the registrar thing, it's just going to go round and round in circles as to who does what.
I just did it because it was volunteered, and I wasn't about to turn down a volunteer, but I'm happy with what I just said. Margie may not be. She has her hand up.
This is Margie. Just wanted to give you an update on that. The GNSO Council approved the form of the Registrant Rights and Responsibilities Charter, and the next step is to go and begin consultations with the registrars on whether that language is appropriate or should be changed. So I like the idea of trying to put some of this information there. It would be in one neat place, but we'd kind of have to look at it to see how you could do it, because that Registrant Rights and Responsibilities Charter is very specific in the coming out of the 2009 RAA. So let's take on our end, we'll take it back and look to see if there's a way to do that, because it would certainly be a very convenient place to deal with some of these issues.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that it be fully integrated, although there may be pointers back and forth, but just the concept being that ICANN is doing this, and there may be other pages nearby on its website which do the kind of things we're talking about. So I wasn't suggesting that they be fully integrated and, perhaps dilute the rights and responsibilities one, just that there already is a semi-home within the ICANN website for this, or will be.
That's right. At the end of the rights and responsibilities charter, we included language that summarized existing consensus policies. So this, at the end of that, it might be appropriate to have something that deals with this. So we'll take it back and see how we might be able to address that. But it's not a bad idea.
Okay. If the rest of you are agreeable, then if you delegate to Marika and I the rewording of this into a form where ICANN is responsible, not registrars, but with the same general intent. Seeing no complaints, number 10. This one talks about the what methods are used to deliver notices. There was a good discussion on, I think started by Michele on email today, about concerns about how binding agreements are when they change, and whether it's practical to change agreements like this. And my suggestion was, if we change wording to lessen the emphasis on it must be in the registration agreement, but it must be somewhere, pointed to by the registration agreement, for instance. For instance, right now, prices are not necessarily in the registration agreement, but they may be pointed to. And there's, I suspect, certainly on many of the agreements I've looked at, there are other clauses where the registration agreement simply points to the current version of something. And would that be agreeable, if we can find the right wording to say that? Michele, you were the one who raised the issue. Does that sound like something that can fly?
Potentially, but I'm not a lawyer. It is. I had my suspicions, which Mike Wildenbaugh confirmed. Because although I'm not a lawyer, I do kind of keep an eye on things. So I suppose the thing is this, is that, somebody like, I don't know, are there any lawyers on this call? I mean, do we have any lawyers? I mean, is this the only working group?
This may be the only one with not many lawyers.
Margie plays one on TV.
Yes, I am a lawyer.
Margie, maybe you can speak to this. It's from the, I don't know if you were following the discussions on the mailing list today. The thing I raised was that the current wording of this recommendation I saw as being problematic, because if we were to change something at some point in the future, then we'd open up a massive can of worms, because basically we'd be changing an agreement / contract without having had the other party's explicit agreement to the change, which although in industry is something that people kind of do all the time, if I can avoid opening a can of worms, I prefer to do so. So Mike Rogenbaugh actually came back to reinforce what I was saying. So I don't know, I'll leave it to you, really.
Michele, I'm not sure I understand your question. I didn't follow the email communications earlier today.
Okay, right. It's getting late in the day for me. basically, the problem I have with this recommendation's current wording was that it could be interpreted far too narrowly. That is to say that if I were to specify today to you, when you register a domain through us, that I was going to send you a notification via carrier pigeon, and there was a pigeon plague that wiped out all the pigeons on the planet, and I would have to start using a carrier eagle in the future, that strictly speaking, I wouldn't be able to do so. Because I would have specified exactly which methods, which is why I've had problems with this from the get-go, because it means that I'm restricted in what I can do. Because again, it's a contract; it's not just a kind of a nice idea. It's something that, if this becomes consensus policy, then registrars are going to be bound by it. Some of the discussion circled around, oh well, you know, you can always change this at a later date. So, which again raises issues. So, pointing to somewhere, from my perspective, I don't see that as being an issue, but getting the insight of somebody who actually has a law degree would be helpful.
Yeah, McKaylee, I believe there are other points currently in the RAA where they have similar requirements, and I would suggest we go and try to use the same structures as you're already bound by. And emulate that. If assuming I'm correct about the assumption, is that okay?
And if I can address it, we're talking about consensus policy here, right? So I believe most of the agreements are set up in a manner that allows consensus policies to be introduced, to the registration agreement. And so it's a complicated issue. I think it's something we'll have to look at and get back to you. And we can put that on the continual list scrolling that Marika's keeping for the legal analysis. But there may be a way. It's just, we'll take a look at that.
Yeah, I think McKaylee's concern is not changing the RAA agreement, but changing his registration agreement with the client. And my recollection is the RAA requires the registration agreement to be compliant with the RAA if there's a change in the RAA. So,
and I believe most registration agreements also include a requirement that consensus policies flow through. So I don't know how you do it specifically in your business, Michaela, but I imagine it must be there in some format. So we'll take a look at it and include it in the issues that Marika is going to follow up on.
And I think there are existing provisions that already map to this, so we can look at those. All right. Number 11, exceptions. Okay, this is one I don't think we ever got to before in our previous review. This is the notification period, and that the requirement is right now that there be at least two. We are making that explicit, and we're putting some suggested timing with a process by which this can be altered if a registrar has a rationale. This is subject to ICANN being able to implement the exception process, and obviously so that's going to be one of the considerations. Comments? No comments, no X's. We'll presume that means general agreement and go on to further wording of it. Number 13, notifications of impending expiration must include methods that do not require explicit action other than standard email receipt in order to receive notifications, the specific target being that you cannot just post it on your domain management systems and presume that the registrant goes and checks it every day. And last one we have here, unless the registered name holder is deleted by the registrar, there must be at least one notification. What does that say? At least 7 days prior to it no longer being renewable. No comments. All right, the only other thing on our list today, then, is the new proposal from Michael. Marika, if we could put that up on the list. I haven't heard anyone recently. I hope I'm not the only one on this call.
I'm still here.
Okay, good.
Okay, Marika, can, yeah, that's good. Remove the number three. It's confusing.
Michael, do you want to go through it?
Sure. So this was really there were two more recommendations that were being talked about on our list that haven't actually made it into the document yet. And one of them, James put forward on behalf of the registrars, that talked about, which was a great offer, which was to give a period of time after expiration which registrars will guarantee for lack of reinventing terms, the original registrant or original name holder can definitely get the name back. And this is after expiration, but prior to a deletion in entering RGP. And I think they suggest originally a 5-day time period, and there was some talking back and forth, and the 10-day seemed to be acceptable to everybody. But then, additionally, Alan put forward on behalf of a few folks the desire, the idea to darken the domain with the intent to make sure that the original registrant that you know we presume has gone AWOL notices that that their domain services, any services that they have associated with the domain, are interrupted, so therefore they can. They're all of a sudden aware that that their name's expired or something's going on, and they it incites them to contact their registrar and ask what's going on. Everyone, you know, had various problems on either side. Registrars, understandably, were trying to balance this with their existing and potential business models plus costs. But I think everyone was fine with the idea of finding some, you know, in principle, you know, everyone was fine with the idea of trying to shake the original registrant awake and give them an opportunity, as long as it didn't disrupt, you know, people's business models or create a cross metric to getting hold of that registrant that, you know, destroyed again the business model. So after going back and forth with okay, 15 different variations, this is what I came up with to amalgamate the two ideas together in a way that I think if there is a registrant still alive to get hold of, original name holder, this should do it. However, it's the least disruptive thing that would get their attention in this regard, that would also allow registrars a fairly extensive amount of flexibility, and hopefully does not cause undue pain or problems with their existing business models, which is why I suggested it. For 8 concurrent days at some point following the expiration, meaning those 8 days could be, you know, starting from day 1 after the expiration. They could start at day 15 of the auto-renew grace period. They could start at day 20. It's really at the registrar's discretion. But when the registrar is prepared to, they will have to start. They're required to start a 8-day period where they disrupt the original DNS resolution path. And the reason we use specifically, you know, disrupt or interrupt it, is because you want to get the original registrant's attention, but that doesn't mean you have to darken the name. It means you can point it toward a, for port 80, you can point it toward a landing site. If it's an email service, you can put it to another landing email server set up to actually act as a gateway and store email, but bounce. Do bounce back so that, you know, you're keeping that potential registrant's email. You have all kinds of options this way because the language is loose enough. The only point that you're trying to do is get their attention at your discretion, at the registrar's discretion on how to do it, as long as they've interrupted the service in one way or another. And during those 8 days, while the service is interrupted, domain must be recoverable or renewable by the original registrant. So I think that's a fairly extremely flexible way to accomplish that goal. And, you know, we need to emphasize that it's still the registrar's complete right if they want to day one to delete the name or delete it day 20 or delete it in the middle of this 8-day period. It doesn't matter because upon deletion, you're still giving the register. You're still, therefore, once you delete, you put into RGP, you're disrupting the service at that point. The name actually is going dark at that point. And the original registrar has the original name holder has the ability to recover the name in RGP, so they still have a protection that's reasonable. And I think that was the balance point.
Thank you, Michael. A couple of comments on it. I like it in that it, I believe, based on our registrar survey, that no registrar would have to do anything particularly different from their normal business model to satisfy this. This doesn't say you can't darken it day one and keep it for 40 days, as some registrars do, because that meets the minimum requirement. And similarly, it allows someone to delete it as early as 8 days afterwards. I'd obviously like to see that longer, but not quibbling over that at the moment. That meets that criteria. I only have one concern with it, and that is the term original DNS resolution path of the RAE. I'm a little worried that for registrars that also are web hosters, that under today's rules, if the page, if the site is redirected to a parked page, a monetized page, or whatever, that can be done without a DNS change, because that can be done purely within the web server. And I want to make sure our wording covered that case.
I think it does, Alan.
Pardon me?
Yeah. Alan, this language absolutely, from a technical person's background, this language absolutely covers that. The requirement is to interrupt the original resolution path. Resolution path, by definition, is all the way from the top of the DNS hierarchy to the final A record. Okay? So, this is an interruption of the resolution path, which would capture the situation you're talking about.
But if you have a web host, if
doesn't
the,
matter.
But this can be done without changing the A record. It's purely done within the web server.
No, but the registrar is required to interrupt the resolution path in this case, Alan.
Ah, okay.
Required.
Sorry. Okay, I was reading it backwards. I withdraw that comment. Thank you. James.
Okay.
Hi, sorry, a little slow on the mute button. Okay, just a couple of comments, observations, and questions, but not before I thank Michael for putting this out there. It's very, I think, very concise. So please, allow me to complicate it. So just first a suggestion when we talk about this 8-day period, and I want to borrow from a couple of country codes here a term that they use that I actually like, which is called quarantine. It's an idea that, and you know, if you, the Webster's or whatever dictionary, I think, says something about quarantine, where something is kind of held in isolation, so it can't interfere with or be interfered with. And I think that, you know, that's a good, rather than putting more acronyms into the ICANN alphabet soup, I kind of like the idea that we could synchronize some terminology around the idea of quarantine. The first question is, why 8 days? You know, how did we arrive at this number? I understand it's probably a decent compromise between 5 and 10, and if that's the answer, well, that's good enough for me, to be honest, at this point in the game. I just want to know if there was something we were aiming at when we were choosing 8 days.
Do you want
me
to answer that, or wait till the or answer all of them at once?
Go ahead and take a swing at that one, as long as I can keep my place in the queue.
that one's the easy one, James. There is something between 5 and 10 days. That's part of it, but logistically, it encapsulates a full week with 8 days. So you know, that's basically the logic. We are definitely a full week if we say 8 days. We're giving them a full week.
And James, we weren't likely to get something more than 10 since 10 was what you were offering. Otherwise, I'll edge it up to 15 right now and make it 2 weeks.
Well, okay, so then the next question I had was, rel- I want to make sure I didn't lose my place here. Oh, yeah, I kind of referenced this or alluded to this on the email list, but if I'm required to give a 8-day concurrent period, suppose I, you know, jamesregistrar.com, decide that I'm going to have the last 8 days of the auto-renew grace period be my concurrent days. But I'm also allowed to delete the name at any time in that 45 days and not necessarily precluding a deletion within this 8-day period. So I could, as a matter of practice, say I'm leaving the last 8 days, but I'm deleting on day 2 of that 8 days. So in effect, I've gutted the intent of this policy in that I'm only allowing 6 days before I kick it over to RGP.
That's not a problem. The deletion is fine. Delete it like immediately upon expiration and take it to RGP. That's actually a fine option. I mean, it's maybe unfortunate for the sleepy registrant, but the important thing is, the important goal or the balance here is they still get a last-ditch effort to recover their domain, even if they're in RGP, and that's an important protection for them. I'm taking both sides. Equally important is the viability and the flexibility of the registrar's business model. Remember, guys, I'm the neutral party that's trying to see both sides here. So, if it's the right thing for the registrar's business model, delete it and go ahead. If what you're really trying to do is maintain that customer, retain that customer, then you can opt into doing the 8-day thing and give them a last-ditch effort at it.
Okay. And just, before I let you go, just one other observation. From my perspective, and I think the perspective of some of the other registrars, but I don't want to presume that or presume to speak for them, but definitely I believe to the greatest benefit of the RAE, I think that those 8 days will have the largest impact if they are the first 8 days. Following auto-renew or following expiration. I just feel like the possibility that some registrar might hide those in the middle of that 45-day period or clip them short at the end with RGP, as we were discussing, I just think it has the possibility to be confusing if it's not the first 8 days. And so, therefore, I would just propose that we discuss that, and if it's something that other registrars aren't going to throw rocks at me for, maybe we should explicitly state that.
So, James, if the registrars are can concur to that, I think we'd all be happy to see it be the first 8 days, if everyone's okay with that. If it doesn't, if consensus can't be built around it, then probably the way it stands still has some very decent effectiveness, but I think you're right.
I think it's diminished quite a bit if it isn't the first 8 days, but that's just my own personal take on that.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's. I think what it does is it still offers some protection to the original name holder, the registrant, even if they play around with it, they've either got to throw it into RGP, which again gives them an option to get the name back, or they have to go through the whole 8 days. They can't. If we all agree to do this as a PDP, then it can't be circumvented without someone, willfully breaking their obligations. Which there'll always be people that potentially do that. We can't solve for that one. That's somebody else's job. I do think it has some effectiveness. Ideally, it'd be great if it was the first 8 days. I think that would be even more powerful. But I don't think it's a showstopper. If you're volunteering to go forward with the registrars and discuss it and see if you can get consensus, that would be fantastic.
Okay. Well, thanks, and I'm hoping they're speaking. Speak up today.
Okay, we're getting perilously close to running out of time, and Margie had her hand up for a long time. Let's go to her quickly.
I just have a question about the 8-day period. It gets original DNS is interrupted, if the registrant realizes they want the name back, do they have to wait the 8 days, or can that 8-day period be shortened so that they can get their, you know, basically pay and renew and get their site back to operating the way it was?
I would assume as soon as they pay or even say they're going to pay, it can be reinstated. But you're right, that needs to be clarified in the policy.
Yeah, because the way I read this was the opposite, that you'd have to wait 8 days, somebody waiting 8 days with no, you know, website might be a problem.
It's basically, right now, virtually every registrar, at least the majority of the large ones, interrupt service today. Whether they do it day one or day three or day five varies, or day 20. But what's being talked about here, is my understanding, is exactly the same thing. Right now, if the domain is blacked out or is redirected to a parked page, as soon as you pay or as soon as you do whatever the incantation is the registrar wants, it goes back to your website.
Okay.
Mikey?
That makes sense.
Thanks,
Alan. This is Ron. I have a question.
Yeah, I'll put you in the queue.
Go ahead, Ron.
Thanks.
Go ahead. You want me to go, or you want?
Yeah,
Ron?
No, Mikey, you start. I'll put Ron in the queue.
Okay. I love this. I think it's great. I want to thank everybody for hanging in there to get to this, and I hope we can finish it off. I think, to the extent that I introduced confusion by insisting on dark, that was my error, and I want to tip my hat to everybody who got past that, because that's not really what I intended. And I like this a lot. That's all.
Yeah, I'll take part responsibility for that. I use the term darken in my proposal, although I defined it as being interrupted or whatever. It still was the word that caught people's attention. Response to the to James's comment on it should be the first 8 days. If you go back way to an earlier version of this, many months ago, and the suggestion was that it be darkened no later than day three, and there was a lot of flack from some registrars and some registrants who, for business continuity reasons, wanted to keep the domain around longer and give a larger grace period and a larger opportunity for the registrar to find the registrant and not stop service too early. So that was why in later versions we had exceptions and things like that. And so I'm happy with it being happening immediately, as happens with most registrars right now, but there were some that objected to it very strenuously. Ron is next.
Yes, I'd like clarification on one point. The 8 days, is that mandating at the end of the 8 days that the registrar put the name in to delete, or is there still the current practice of approximately 30 to 40 days before the name goes into delete?
That's correct. So if I'm a registrar and I choose to apply those 8 days immediately after expiration, I would do this process from day one to eight. Once I'm on day nine, I can continue with the domain and whatever else my business model normally does with that domain throughout the rest of the auto-renew grace period.
As I understand it, it is silent. Therefore, the registrar can do whatever they want. Currently, Two Cows says we will give you 40 days. They darken day one and give you 40 days to renew, and this would allow them to do that.
I would suggest you stop using the word darken and use interrupt.
No, sorry. Yeah. Interrupt. Thank you. I didn't even realize I said it. But some registrars interrupt immediately and give many, many days. This policy would allow them to do that. Some registrars darken, and after 10 days, they sell it unilaterally.
Interrupt.
Interrupts. Did I say darken again?
Yes, you did.
With me, if you can, or teleconferencely. Interrupt, and after 10 days or whatever number of days, they unilaterally sell it, or they delete it. All of those things are viable. They could even put the old site back up again at day nine. as if nothing had happened. I don't know anyone is going to do that, but they could. Michael, did I represent you properly?
Yep, they can do what they want. That's the idea, because we want to give protections with also allowing people equally. We want registrars to be able to have their viable business models.
Okay. Ron, anything else from you?
No, thanks for the clarification.
McKaylee and then Cheryl.
Let Cheryl go first.
Oh, how very polite of you, McKaylee. I appreciate that. I was on the call the whole time, but I dropped off the Adobe room. My screen went dark, and it took me forever to get back in, which is why I put my hand up when I did. I just wanted to say thank you very, very, very much on bended knee, Michael. And I'm very happy with the way this is heading. But if we can hear back from the registrars whether there is an impediment to it being in the first 8 days, let's find out about that as soon as possible. If not, I think this needs a real number and to be integrated as soon as possible. Thank you.
Just on that line, my intent was by the middle of this week to, or not middle, by Thursday, to have all of the other recommendations which we've been talking about that haven't been yet integrated into the proposal to be integrated, so we have the full set for our last two meetings. McKaylee.
Just going back to Cheryl and to you, Alan, I think the with regard to the registrars, I think the some of the input that Michael has given has been incredibly helpful, and I'll echo Cheryl's comments. Thank you, Michael. Please, this is very good. We would have to, I think we would have to discuss this and just see if there's something that we, as individual registrars, might have overlooked. Because, as you all know, and Mason says this a lot, and others will say this, I mean, there's a lot of different business models. Some of the things that some registrars may wish to do may strike me as being rather odd, but probably things that I do that they find quite odd. Are you, Mike, are you saying that you can't hear me?
Ah, there you go. Maybe you just hit your finger over the microphone.
Very faint, McKaylee.
Sorry. So, I mean, the thing, for example, with respect to, you know, the interruption of services on domains, I mean, when we were in Brussels, a registrar from somewhere in South America raised an issue because, you know, that the way they handle things with their registrants is very, very different. So, you know, it's not something we can rush into. I mean, hopefully we could get discuss this, get some feedback, but obviously, you know, it could have a big, nasty knock-on effect that I can't see. What's another reason why I've raised my hand? Obviously, it's not that important, so I'll take it down again.
We have 9 minutes to go, and at this point, no hands.
Call it a job well done.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a question on the draft final report, because I think at the last meeting, some people indicated that they, you know, still wanted to send in some suggestions, and we spoke about, you know, some of the changes that people have suggested for the background section and actually including that in the notes. And I realize that actually those people that we're talking about that are not on the call, but does it make sense to send out another reminder to the list to see if people are still working on that so we can move forward on that part of the report as well? Or has anyone has received any feedback from others that they're still working on it?
Well, I know I had some comments that I made in my comments on Oliver Hope's suggestions, and I think you made a similar one in terms of not changing the part that was taken out of the issues report. Other than that, I think at some point we're going to have to assume that no one else has problems if they haven't commented. There'll always be a chance to alter it, you know, in the very final report. I don't think we can wait too much longer since we only have two more meetings. The concept of a late in the week meeting has been essentially squashed, so that we have two more meetings, and I think the recommendations are going to take a fair amount of that. Not seeing any other comments, I assume we're going to have to go ahead with something like that. Marika and I, you and I were delegated to decide on exactly how we poll for consensus, and I think we need to talk about that very soon. Not today, obviously, but perhaps tomorrow. Anything else we need to break up, or do we leave have an opportunity for ending this meeting a few minutes early after a very successful one? I thank you all. No other comments? Thank you all.
Thanks, Alan.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, gang. Great job.
Thank you, Michael. Bye. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Like she's here.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Ron.
Bye.
I do need to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 1st of February, we have Alan Greenberg, Michaela Nalon, Paul Diaz, Ted Suzuki, Ron Wickersham, Barry Cobb, James Bladel, Mike O'Connor, Michael Young. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And we have apologies today from Anil George, from Mason Cole, Jeff Eckhouse, and Oliver Hope. Can I please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes? Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. All right, Marika, we have how many meetings left?
I figure my calendar at 2 meetings before we hit the publication deadline. The publication deadline is the 21st of March.
All right, so 2 meetings after this one.
Right.
Okay, then let us go ahead and see where we can make some headway. There's been a really good conversation on email this morning or this afternoon, wherever you were. Nice if we can keep that going throughout the week, but it's a good start. How about if we go through them in order and look at the things that are currently outstanding? Marika, is the version you have on Adobe the same as the last one I sent out?
This is Marika, I believe so.
Okay, then I can use the larger one that I can actually read on my screen. I may not notice hands going up, so if someone has something to intervene, please yell out, but I'll try to keep an eye on it. All right. The first item is on recommendation number one, and the outstanding question was, should there be an exclusion for what were called SRSU domains? There was a discussion today on email where Michaela highlighted the issues, and I made a comment which caused me to think about it more than I had before. Operationally, I don't think it makes a difference because these are not domains that will likely enter the RGP. So the real only difference is, does the back-end supplier have to gear up for something that won't happen? And chances are they'll already be doing that for other domains if they run multiple ones. And if we try to craft an exemption, we're going to have to describe the characteristics of this type of class of TLD, an endeavor which failed relatively abysmally in the VI group. My inclination is to completely ignore it. And if there's something comes up in the comment period, then we'll react to that at that point, but at this point, not try to put an exclusion in. Michaela, does that sound right to you? And I see Michael Young is now on the call, and if this recommendation is likely to cause significant problem with registries that you're aware of, maybe you could elaborate at this point if there is anything like that.
I'll let Michael go ahead. He's more of an expert than I would be in this area.
I think the only exemption I would put in there, Alan, explicitly, is for legacy GTLDs. Because the way it's written right now, a transition period will be allowed. There are some existing models. It just doesn't make sense.
including the non, but within the non-sponsored ones? Because we are saying excluding the sponsored ones.
Are excluding it? Okay, then. I think we're okay there, but I'll if we stay silent on it, it can always be addressed, I suppose, between in the application process. But to be honest, ICANN wants to sign a consistent registry agreement, which this will be this is already expressed as a requirement in. If I remember off the top of my head, maybe Marika, you recall the DAG 5 off the top of your head. I think that this is a requirement in the drafted registry agreement for new TLDs.
This being the RGP?
Yeah, RGP, yeah.
Oh, it wasn't originally. Maybe it is now.
I can't recall.
Okay.
Marika, do you remember?
This is Marika. I'm sorry. I'm no DAG expert, so wouldn't be able to help out. I don't know if Margie, by any chance, knows the answer. No, she knows more about the DAG, but possibly other areas than that one.
All right. Well, if we're redundant with what the DAG says, it's certainly not going to hurt at this point.
Yeah, I think my only concern is I am supposed to be representing the concerns of the RYSG, and we do have at least one member that's concerned that this won't be put upon them. So I think because this refers to unsponsored, I think that's okay, but I'd be more comfortable if we had an explicit statement in here for legacy.
Okay. At one point, I had made a statement saying all of the unsponsored except name and pro had the RGP, and I think you came back saying they also had it.
They do. It's COOP that doesn't.
Okay.
But
is that sponsored or unsponsored?
That's what I'm trying to remember. I'd have to go back and look up their agreement.
This is Barry. It's sponsored.
I think they're sponsored. But
yeah.
I don't want to say that 100%
for sure. Certainly there's a comment period and an opportunity to change this. This is not cast in concrete, but it sounds like
it's
the only
issue, but
we
can solve for that one. Yeah.
And if there's a real strong reason for unsponsored legacy ones to get an exemption or something, then we can obviously consider that, but that goes against the level playing field that we're aiming towards.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, that's fine here. Number two, Michele, you're happy at this point?
My happiness is always relative, Alan.
It's always important as well, Michele.
We do want Michele happy.
All right. Which one is the next one? All right, that's just the definition, and if anyone has any suggestions on the wording that we have right now...
I proposed cleaner language. I don't... It's not...
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. That I wasn't sure that was in relation to this one. It is.
Number three, right?
Yeah. Yes, and...
Well, that
Marika,
would be...
You had that one in a text box, I know, somewhere.
Yes, give me a second. There goes.
Yeah, I thought
no,
the
not that one.
I thought your comment was in relation to number three, the RGP one.
Right. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up here. There was another one that I suggested, simplified language. Maybe
yeah, it was for number three. It was the one that you had complex language last time.
Yes, and then there was... There was another one around RGP. It's just around RGP.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay, the comment was that the language needs to be precise regarding which registrant is being referred to, presumably the one who is in who is prior to expiration. Okay, that was Jeff's comment that how do we know who the registrant is? And I think the answer is we don't, but there's a presumption that the one that who is the correct one prior to registration. I don't think, other than knowing what the internal record keeping of the registrar is, I don't think there's anything that ICANN can point to. So if we specifically say the who is prior to expiration, I think that's as precise as we're going to get. And I don't think we, in fact, have any option other than that.
Alan?
Yeah, oh, Michele, sorry. I had moved
this
my
really
screen. Yep, go ahead.
I dropped off. Sorry, Alan.
Okay.
I'm just going to throw a spanner in there on that one.
Sure.
As some of you may recall, we took over the domains from another registrar at the beginning of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the data sets that was escrowed and that ICANN was able to supply to us via Iron Mountain wasn't 100% complete. So it actually was a problem. There was a situation where we couldn't. Well, we thought we had a set of data which reflected a reality, and it then transpired that it didn't reflect reality. So I'd be very cautious about how this is worded. Very, very, very cautious.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is essentially what is normal business practice in your business, in that there are always going to be situations where the who is not accurate because of, you know, various changes, whether it's death or corporate takeover or a web hosting company going out of business.
No, but Alan, I mean, this is much more. It's much messier than that. I mean, we have a situation where. Okay, the registrar that the domains were registered through ceased to exist for all intents and purposes. Okay, so they lost their accreditation. They were no longer authorized to connect into the registries. Because the data scrolls happen once a week, except if you've got higher volumes. So. A GoDaddy or an Enom is probably scrolling practically every single day. I don't know. They might be able to tell you. Whereas a small to medium-sized registrar would only be scrolling once a week. Even with the gap of, let's just say, for hypothetically, that the registrar lost their accreditation on a Friday and the last to scroll was from, say, Tuesday, the names... would have been registered in or re-registered or whatever, transferred in, God only knows, in that lapse of period. So the situation we ended up with was where we were trying to use historical whois to try and reconstruct some of the data, and it wasn't correct. I mean, we were able to resolve it because fortunately we're able to find the other talk to other registrars and, you know, share a bit of data and all that kind of thing. It's just I'm very, very wary of wording this too narrowly.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. But what I was saying was the kind of thing you're describing is not unique to expiration.
Oh, sure. The thing you see, I suppose what I'm trying to get at is that, let's say, for example, if I have a bunch of domain names registered to me and I get hit by a bus, then you get into the legal thing that would be my heir, my estate, whatever, that might take over, or, you know, or corporate acquisitions and all that. This was a case of where it fell outside that completely.
Yeah, no, I understand. What I'm saying is there is nothing unique to expiration. So you're cautioning, saying we shouldn't have the words lock into who is so much that special cases can't be used, can't be handled.
I suppose, to paraphrase me, okay.
Okay, and I'm not sure what wording we can put in there. I think it is sufficient at this point in our process for us to put a comment on it, so that when, you know, assuming we get to the stage of trying to make policy out of this, that the policy captures the caveats you're raising. Because certainly they are relevant. There are times when whois is not going to be accurate, and that is not what we want to be used. But I don't think we can have an exhaustive list of all those cases now.
Well, Alan, the other thing as well is, if you go on the basis purely of who is, and the registrant is using who is privacy service, proxy service, call it what you will, then by that measure, you know, then I don't know, whatever the name of the entity being used by
yeah.
large registrar X would be for the intent for the purpose of this would be the registrant, even though they're actually not.
And presumably, if they're being honorable, they are acting on the instructions of their client. If they're not, then that's nothing we can address.
Alan?
Yep, go ahead.
Jump in.
Sure.
Michael, unfortunately, is having a pretty tough time on the phone, but
yeah, I'm trying to.
He posted his recommendation language into the
okay.
chat, and Marika's put it in the note off on the right side. Maybe we could get back to that and see if this is
yeah.
close
okay,
enough
but
for
that, guys, can I just clarify the note that you're
sure.
seeing on the side? Recommendation 3 is just recommendation 3. The language you see there is the new recommendation underneath is not related to recommendation 3. It is genuinely a new recommendation altogether.
Okay.
So it's not a
yeah,
replacement
that's
of recommendation
that's a separate
3.
Thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a separate thing, and it's just, I think this is, thank
yeah.
you. There
Thanks.
We go.
Rick has got it now. So, Michael, since you're back on, you can run with it. I wasn't sure if you were on the phone still.
I was just trying to get a bit of air in between the voices, Mikey. So, yeah, I just simplified the language here. You know, the intent is that the intent behind all this is that, you know, if a name goes into RGP, whoever originally registered the name and was using it during its active lifespan can recover it. And we assume that's non-controversial for registrars, since if they're deleting the domain, they probably have no other pertinent interest to it anyways. And this is just to stipulate or actually state that. Obviously, Michele, if there's issues with, for whatever reason, knowing who the actual original name holder was, then that's another issue altogether. But that's a problem that could cause you grief at any number of levels, I guess, really, if you don't know who originally held the name.
Yeah, I think so. And the recommendation number 2 that we're looking at now is, in fact, an attempt to define registered name holder at expiration. And that's, Michele is referencing that grief that you're talking about. So the question is,
yeah.
if we have to define it, how do we define it? I don't think we need to solve it here, but it's something that has to be done carefully. Mikey, do you still want in?
Oh, sorry, that's left over. Are we working on number 2 or number 3?
Number 2 is what we were working on.
Okay.
Well,
so
I thought we were on number 3.
No.
Yeah, I think part of the difficulty is that we've got people looking at different stuff.
Okay. I think we're now. If you're happy with what I've said, that is, it's something that will need to be carefully crafted, but it's not something that we need to craft carefully today, then we can go on to number 3, if everyone's happy with that. All right. Number 3 basically, Michael has replaced it, and that's the one up in the text box, the note box right now. And I'm certainly happy with it. It's a lot shorter than it was before. Do we have any further comment on that? Or is that acceptable? I see there's a chat going on. I don't know if it's something we should be following or not.
I'm just trying to clarify. There's still a little confusion, I think, around the recommendation number 3 was I just simplified the language around it, and I put that to the list after reading people's comments. And then later, afterwards, there were not officially on this list, but there's been conversations to the list about 2 proposals. One was about ensuring recovery of a domain name after expiration that was put forward on behalf of the registrars by James. And then another one was about darkening the domain sometime during the after expiration. Which I think, Alan, you originally put down in the email list.
Yeah, that one is not in this list of proposals yet, but we
right.
discussed it before
right.
the end of the meeting.
So those two I wrapped into a unified proposal, and the language that Marika put up just a little while ago, that people were getting confused with recommendation three, that's a new recommendation that hopefully wraps up a middle ground for these other elements that have been under discussion and, as far as I understand, with the groups have been kind of a bit of a stalemate.
Yeah. Okay, you didn't mean three. Three is the one, is the RGP one.
Right.
You're now talking about the unnumbered one.
The brand spanking new one.
Yeah, okay. And we will get to that before the end of the meeting. All right. I think on three we're satisfied with what we have. All right, on to four. And anyone remember what this is? Change. Okay, this essentially says that the right to renew cannot be removed by the simple change of a WHOIS record. This is not during RGP, but not only during RGP, but a simple renewal.
Why don't we just say that, Alan?
I
was interested. What you just said, I understood.
Okay.
And I don't have an issue with. What's down there at the moment, and for transcript purposes, for those who don't recognize the Irish accent, this is Michaeli. The wording that's there, I find it's like it's terribly convoluted. What you just said actually makes sense to me.
Okay.
I mean, it's keeping it as simple as possible would.
Yeah, the first phrase was there because someone had raised a point in a previous conversation. I'm trying to remember it, that there was something raised that a change might be made to WHOIS that was at the explicit request of the registrar of the registrant. We'll try to dig it up, and I agree. If we can remove that first clause, that would make life a lot simpler. I don't remember why it was there, to be honest. In any case, we will go through the recording and try to recover the words I used and put them in, barring some strong rationale. And if there's a strong rationale, I'll put it on the mailing list. Is that okay? Seeing no X's and no one has their hand up, we'll go on to the next item. Recommendation number five. And this one basically says that all RAA responsibilities must be carried out either by the registrar or, at their option, delegated to a reseller, and presumably nested if necessary. James.
Hi, Alan. James speaking. The language of this recommendation to me, and maybe we've already discussed this, as it stands on its own, I don't understand how it adds anything to the work of the Pedner Group. It seems to be it's pointing at the RAA, and it's saying something that for 2009 and beyond is already in the RAA. So I guess I'm just maybe something we've already talked about, but I don't understand.
Do you want me to answer that before we go on to Michaeli, or?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I would like to hear if other registrars also maybe can help me understand what I'm missing.
Sure. Let me give my version, and then we'll go on to Michaeli or anyone else who wants to speak. For the 2009 agreement, and you said it's already there, It is not already there. There are explicit items mentioned in 3.12.3, 3.12.5, which are the reseller must do, but there are other things that are not within that domain, that are not covered by that. And this one is trying to make a global statement. The reason it's within PEDNR is because one of the issues that has been discussed time and time again is a lot of these problems are because of issues with resellers. And, you know, if you look at issues like posting prices and stuff that we're talking about later, it's as Jeff pointed out, if you have a reseller market, the registrar cannot do it because the prices may vary. And therefore, we're saying that it's up to the reseller if the registrar chooses to delegate.
So okay, so to
make, make those clauses work, it has to be there. And yes, part of it was covered in the 2009 changes to the RAA. But
okay,
you know,
so a more generic question would be, does something like this, a disclaimer or a statement of, you know, scope or whatever, does something like this now have to be in every PDP final report? Because what you just said, I think, is not, if that's correct, it's not just a PEDNR issue, right? I mean, that could apply if we were passing a PDP about something else.
Well, and
yeah,
but once it goes there, it's there for everything.
You know, Alan, this clause is really a little nerve-wracking, to be honest, because it's like you said, it's almost like a sweeping contractual clause. It seems to me to be something that should be dealt with at the contractual level, not necessarily here. If we're going to make it apply to the PEDNR work, then maybe it should be reduced in scope to be specific to the PEDNR recommendations.
Oh, I have no problem if it's specific to the PEDNR recommendations, but I would think it would be clearer, cleaner to do it in general. But I'm willing to, as this. The part in it highlighted says, I think we need to get some input on this from ICANN compliance and ICANN legal, because I'm out of my depth as what should be in this and what is, but I know for the clauses that we're talking about, the new ones, if it's not passed on to the reseller, then they don't have the effect we want. Yeah.
Well, this kind of thing could tie us up in knots again for weeks and not months. I think if you're willing to narrow it toward the specific PEDNR recommendations, we have a chance of moving forward.
Okay, I think we'll have to look at that, but I'll put that on my to-do list and come back. We have a whole bunch of hands. Marika?
I'm sorry, Alan, if I could respond.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, so just hypothetically, if this recommendation were not present in our report, we would take any consensus policy coming out of the PEDNR working group to be a part of our obligations and therefore a part of our reseller obligations. So I guess that's where I'm coming from, is seeing it as, you know, why is it here? Is it trying to plug a hole that exists or perceived to exist in the RAA? And if so, doesn't that need to go somewhere else? Because you know what I'm saying is that we when something comes out as a consensus policy, you know, our resellers don't have a choice. They get it just as much as we do. So anyway, that's just my position on that.
I agree with you 100%, but given that, I'm confused why it was felt necessary to put 3.12.3 and 3.12.5 in the 2009 RAA, which highlight those specific responsibilities, which, as you just said and as I agree, are part of contract law and should be a given.
Well, but now that they are in there, why do we have to keep putting them back in there?
Well, because those in fact don't cover everything. They were specific parts of the responsibilities. Okay, Marika, and then Michaeli and Mikey.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to know that I'll take this back to our legal and compliance team for some input, and I hope to have that in ahead of the next call.
Okay, thank you, Michaeli.
I kind of echo what James was saying. I can understand to a point what you're trying to achieve, but I don't really think that this is the correct place to do it. The 2009 RAA introduces specifics with respect to resellers that have already been mentioned. Those of us under the 2009 RAA, which together we account for, oh, I don't know what percentage it is these days, 80% of registrations or whatever the hell it is, are bound by certain things. In other working groups with possible, or I can't remember what the hell the thing was called, possible improvements or whatever to the RAA, yada, 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 which are two separate work groups. There was a lot of stuff there which came up with respect to resellers, and although we labored in that work in those working groups for several months on a variety of different topics, nobody could satisfactorily even come up with a clear, meaningful, non-gameable definition of what actually constituted a reseller. To address the actual specifics of what you are trying to achieve slash avoid, it won't actually solve anything, because if I'm a dirty, filthy scumbag who is out to completely screw over registrants, all I'll do is I'll register all the domain names with my details, so ultimately I will be the de facto registrant of all the domain names, and the third-party beneficiary who is won't have any way of actually doing anything unless they go take somebody to court in a civil court. So you're back to square one. And unfortunately, I am speaking from experience in this. So, I mean, we see this kind of rubbish all the time. You know, they register the domain names to themselves. So, you know, it's not you. This is actually isn't actually going to solve the problem that exists. Hello?
I'm here.
Alan's line dropped.
Oh, it was just Alan. Okay, so I wasn't talking into a void.
It doesn't work. I see that Alan just got disconnected, so we'll give him a second to get back.
But he missed that. I was in full flight and everything. Oh, well.
So, you know, while Alan's coming back in, this is Mikey.
I'm back.
Is what you're saying, Michele, that ICANN cannot make resellers abide by the consensus policies?
Well, in short, no. I mean, how can they? There's no visibility on them.
I thought there was a chain of contracts there.
Not necessarily, no. ICANN do not have a direct contract with a reseller.
Now, they can only hold the registrar accountable, who in turn can hold the reseller accountable. Is that what you're saying, Michele?
Yeah, you can hold. I mean, if ICANN compliance can contact me as the registrar of record for a domain name and say that they have received a complaint, a query, whatever the hell you want to call it, in relation to a name that is on our accreditation, which we will then have to deal with. And that's the way it is dealt with by most registrars, to the best of my knowledge. Obviously, I can't speak for them all, but there's others on this call, so I'm sure that they will be able to answer that. But ICANN as an organization has no way of seeing who would be acting as a reseller of anybody else. And one of the things that we did discuss at length in the RAA working groups was, you know, there's so many ways you could be a reseller in inverted commas, and you know, nobody would ever actually see it, because how am I meant to know that if you register 25 domain names that they're not just for you and your friends and your family? You could be reselling them to somebody else, or as happened to us recently, we discovered that some little charmer up the country was going around the place presenting invoices with our logo and everything on them, and charging registrants about 10 times what we charge.
So this is Mikey. I think I'm next in the queue. Yeah. It seems like the intent that we all have is the same, which is to make sure that whatever we come up with is transmitted to the responsibilities of resellers. And it seems to me that there are a couple of ways to do it. One, you know, Michael's suggestion that somebody's suggestion that we narrow this to only apply to our recommendations is one way to go. Another would be to acknowledge this but not make it binding policy. Just make it a recommendation or a best practice or I don't know what. But I agree with folks who say that trying to solve this issue suddenly sounds like a giant pile of work that's way beyond our scope. I wouldn't want to risk the progress we've made getting stuck on that. At the same time, I wouldn't want to lose the intent that we've got, which is to make sure that it's not just registrars, but also their resellers that play by the rules. I don't know what magical language accomplishes that, but it sounds like this language isn't quite right.
Okay, we have James next, but Marika has offered to go to legal and compliance and come back to us at the beginning of next week and tell us what their position is on this, whether they think it's appropriate here or should be done through some other way or whatever. James?
I think Mikey and Kelly and Michael covered it. You know, it's just the bottom line is it is kind of a doorway, I think, into a bigger can of worms. McKelly, to some extent, is correct that resellers are kind of off the radar, but that while that may be true, it also shouldn't matter. You know, the registry has the registrar of record, whether it is GoDaddy or, let's say, Wild West Domains. That's whose phone you need to ring when there's a problem. You know, it's understood by registrars that when they take on a reseller, they're responsible for the conduct of that reseller. Thanks.
Okay. I think the substance of what we were trying to get at here was that making a rule for registrars which can be blatantly ignored by a reseller and that reduces or impacts what the potential registrant or registrant sees is the problem with and how to fix it. I think we need some advice at this point. So let's put this one on hold. Five.
Well, okay, so Alan.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, just in the interest of not letting something dangle forever, you know, I think what I'd like to see out of this personally is that, you know, in the next few days we actually get a feedback from, you know, from legal, ICANN's legal, what their position is on it. And you know, we decide on an action that doesn't hold back the rest of the work. So I want to emphasize that. I don't want us to be discussing this again like two or three.
Marika says she'll do her best to get feedback as quickly as possible, and I'll work with Marika in the next, you know, beginning of her day tomorrow to try to make sure the question is worded such that our concerns are addressed, are relayed.
Even if that means, you know, punting it to another more appropriate place for it to be worked on, then at least we've done that, right?
Understood.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, I'm trying to parse this at the same time. We're now on 6, I believe, and this is the one that says the pricing must be disclosed, the pricing for a renewal post-expiration must be disclosed. One of the issues raised was what happens if you have resellers and you're not the one setting the price, they are, and the previous item we just discussed was there to address that. And we're going to have to wait for that one to come back. There was some feeling that the language was was not clear enough to make sure that it was understood we were not setting a price, but we were talking purely about disclosure, and working group members were requested to provide additional alternative wording. I don't believe I've seen any. Is there anything else to add in this meeting? If not, then the explanatory note that will go with the recommendation will make it excruciatingly clear what we are intending to do and what we are not. And again, when this final wording of a document comes out in a policy, that's a different issue. So general agreement on that one. Number seven. This one I think we had agreement on already. There was no question. That is, if education material comes out, registrars will point to it. Changing the term auto-renew grace period to something else. And how do we suggest? There was a caution that changing the word in the RAA may not be sufficient, and obviously in the, it would have to change in the various other contracts. But there may be EPP implications or something like that. How do we go forward on this? Marika, do you have any suggestions who we can talk to?
This is Marika. Apologies, I was just multitasking. What was the question?
Okay. The question is on the changing the auto-renew grace period terminology to something else so that we don't have two confusing terms used which mean very different things. And there was a concern raised that simply us changing the definition is not sufficient because of EPP implications or, RFC implications,
right,
or something like that.
Right. There's actually a question I already put to our compliance and the legal team, and I haven't gotten feedback yet. And I'm sure they're very overwhelmed with all the other stuff that's going on, so I'll do my best to press
okay.
on
so
that.
Okay. So that one stands. There's no disagreement, but we need to be careful about the wording. And make sure it's viable. Next one was recommendation 9, which was best practice that a registrar will design and host a neutral site with educational materials. It was pointed out that this site may well be used for things other than what we're talking about here. The last issue, there was very strong support. And the question about how registrars will do this. This one came out of the recommendations that James had distributed, and I guess I would ask James or any other registrar if this needs to be reworded so it's more palatable to them. I just took it verbatim, but there was a pretty well unanimous support in concept. James.
Alan, James speaking. I think that the part that was just maybe a little shaky was the idea of who would be designing the content for that. To keep it as neutral as possible and et cetera, and not necessarily making it purely a marketing pitch. I mean, we do that very well on our own, thanks. but I think while registrars can possibly provide the infrastructure and the facilities and help publicize this, I'm not sure that the curriculum, if you will, needs to come from us. We could certainly validate anything that other groups might put together, but and fact check it. But I don't think it should come from us.
All right, I have a recommendation on how to solve it, but Michele next.
Yes, Alan. The one possible solution would be the rights and responsibilities page thing when it eventually goes live, maybe just including something there.
That's pretty close to what I was going to say. I was going to say changes from a best practice recommendation to a firm recommendation that I can do this with the support of registrars and at large.
I'd support that, but if you use the registrar thing, it's just going to go round and round in circles as to who does what.
I just did it because it was volunteered, and I wasn't about to turn down a volunteer, but I'm happy with what I just said. Margie may not be. She has her hand up.
I just wanted to give you an update on that. The GNSO Council approved the form of the Registrant Rights and Responsibilities Charter, and the next step is to go and begin consultations with the registrars on whether that language is appropriate or not, or should be changed. So I like the idea of trying to put some of this information there. It would be in one neat place, but we'd kind of have to look at it to see how you could do it, because that Registrant Rights and Responsibilities Charter is very specific in the coming out of the 2009 RAA. So let's take on our end, we'll take it back and look to see if there's a way to do that, because it would certainly be a very convenient place to deal with some of these issues.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that it be fully integrated, although there may be pointers back and forth, but just the concept being that ICANN is doing this, and there may be other pages nearby on its website which do the kind of things we're talking about. So I wasn't suggesting that they'd be fully integrated and, perhaps dilute the rights and responsibilities one, just that there already is a semi-home within the ICANN website for this, or will be.
That's right. And at the end of the Rights and Responsibilities Charter, we included language that summarized existing consensus policies. So this, at the end of that, it might be appropriate to have something that deals with this. So we'll take it back and see how we might be able to address that. But it's not a bad idea.
Okay. If the rest of you are agreeable, then if you delegate to Marika and I the rewording of this into a form where ICANN is responsible, not registrars, but with the same general intent. Seeing no complaints, number 10. This one talks about the what methods are used to deliver notices. There was a good discussion on, I think started by Michele on email today, about concerns about how binding agreements are when they change and whether it's practical to change agreements like this. And my suggestion was if we change wording to lessen the emphasis on it must be in the registration agreement, but it must be somewhere, pointed to by the registration agreement, for instance. For instance, right now, prices are not necessarily in the registration agreement, but they may be pointed to, and there's, I suspect, certainly on many of the agreements I've looked at, there are other clauses where the registration agreement simply points to the current version of something. And would that be agreeable if we can find the right wording to say that? Michele, you were the one who raised the issue. Does that sound like something that that can fly?
Potentially, but I'm not a lawyer. It is. I had my suspicions, which Mike Wildenbaugh confirmed. Because although I'm not a lawyer, I do kind of keep an eye on things. So I suppose the thing is this: is that somebody like I don't know. Are there any lawyers on this call? Do we have any lawyers? Or is this the only working group?
This may be the only one with not many lawyers.
Margie plays one on TV.
Yes, I am a lawyer.
Margie, maybe you can speak to this. It's from the, I don't know if you were following the discussions on the mailing list today. The thing I raised was that the current wording of this recommendation I saw as being problematic, because if we were to change something at some point in the future, then we'd open up a massive can of worms, because basically we'd be changing an agreement / contract without having had the other party's explicit agreement to the change, which although in industry is something that people kind of do all the time, If I can avoid opening a can of worms, I prefer to do so. So Mike Rodenbaugh actually came back kind of to reinforce what I was saying. So I don't know. I'll leave it to you, really.
Michele, I'm not sure I understand your question. I didn't follow the email communications earlier today.
Okay, right. It's getting late in the day for me. Basically, the problem I have with this recommendation's current wording was that it could be interpreted far too narrowly. That is to say that if I were to specify today to you when you register a domain through us that I was going to send you a notification via carrier pigeon, and there was a pigeon plague that wiped out all the pigeons on the planet, and I would have to start using a carrier eagle in the future, that strictly speaking, I wouldn't be able to do so. Because I would have specified exactly which methods, which is why I've had problems with this from the get-go. Because it means that I'm restricted in what I can do. Because again, it's a contract. It's not just a kind of a nice idea. It's something that, if this becomes consensus policy, then registrars are going to be bound by it. Some of the discussion circled around, oh well, you know, you can always change this at a later date, which again raises issues. So, pointing to somewhere, from my perspective, I don't see that as being an issue, but getting the insight of somebody who actually has a law degree would be helpful.
Yeah, Michele, I believe there are other points currently in the RAA where they have similar requirements, and I would suggest we go and try to use the same structures as you're already bound by and emulate that. Assuming I'm correct about the assumption, is that okay?
Yeah, and if I can address it, we're talking about consensus policy here, right? So I believe most of the agreements are set up in a manner that allows consensus policies to be introduced, to the registration agreement. And so it's a complicated issue. I think it's something we'll have to look at and get back to you. And we can put that on the continual list scrolling that Marika's keeping for the legal analysis. But there may be a way. It's just, we'll take a look at that.
Yeah, I think Michele's concern is not changing the RAA agreement, but changing his registration agreement with the client. And my recollection is the RAA requires the registration agreement to be compliant with the RAA if there's a change in the RAA. So,
and I believe most registration agreements also include a requirement that consensus policies flow through. So I don't know how you do it specifically in your business, Michele, but I imagine it must be there in some format. So we'll take a look at it and include it in the issues that Marika is going to follow up on.
And I think there are existing provisions that already map to this, so we can look at those. All right. Number 11, exceptions. Okay, this is one I don't think we ever got to before in our previous review. This is the notification period, and that the requirement is right now that there be at least two. We are making that explicit, and we're putting some suggested timing with a process by which this can be altered if a registrar has a rationale. This is subject to ICANN being able to implement the exception process, and obviously so that's going to be one of the considerations. Comments? No comments, no X's. We'll presume that means general agreement and go on to further wording of it. Number 13, notifications of impending expiration must include methods that do not require explicit action other than standard email receipt in order to receive notifications, the specific target being that you cannot just post it on your domain management systems and presume that the registrant goes and checks it every day. And last one we have here, unless the registered name holder is deleted by the registrar, there must be at least one notification what does that say, at least 7 days prior to it no longer being renewable. No comments. All right, the only other thing on our list today, then, is the new proposal from Michael. Marika, if we could put that up on the list. I haven't heard anyone recently. I hope I'm not the only one on this call.
I'm still here.
Okay, good.
Okay, Marika, that's good. Remove the number 3. That's confusing.
Michael, do you want to go through it?
Sure. So this was really there were two more recommendations that were being talked about on our list that haven't actually made it into the document yet. And one of them, James put forward on behalf of the registrars, that talked about, which was a great offer, which was to give a period of time after expiration in which registrars will guarantee for lack of reinventing terms, the original registrant or original name holder can definitely get the name back. And this is after expiration, but prior to a deletion and entering RGP. And I think they suggest originally a 5-day time period, and there was some talking back and forth, and the 10-day seemed to be acceptable to everybody. But then, additionally, Alan put forward on behalf of a few folks the desire, the idea to darken the domain with the intent to make sure that the original registrant that we presume has gone AWOL notices that that their domain services, any services that they have associated with the domain, are interrupted, so therefore they can. They're all of a sudden aware that that their name's expired or something's going on, and it incites them to contact their registrar and ask what's going on. Everyone, had various problems on either side. Registrars, understandably, were trying to balance this with their existing and potential business models plus costs. But I think everyone was fine with the idea of finding some, in principle, everyone was fine with the idea of trying to shake the original registrant awake and give them an opportunity, as long as it didn't disrupt, people's business models or create a cross metric to getting hold of that registrant that, destroyed again the business model. So after going back and forth with 15 different variations, this is what I came up with to amalgamate the two ideas together in a way that I think if there is a registrant still alive to get hold of, an original name holder, this should do it. However, it's the least disruptive thing that would get their attention in this regard, that would also allow registrars a fairly extensive amount of flexibility, and hopefully does not cause undue pain or problems with their existing business models, which is why I suggested it. For 8 concurrent days at some point following the expiration, meaning those 8 days could be, starting from day 1 after the expiration. They could start at day 15 of the auto-renew grace period. They could start at day 20. It's really at the registrar's discretion. But when the registrar is prepared to, they will have to start. They're required to start a 8-day period where they disrupt the original DNS resolution path. And the reason we use specifically, disrupt or interrupt it, is because you want to get the original registrant's attention, but that doesn't mean you have to darken the name. It means you can point it toward for port 80, you can point it toward a landing site. If it's an email service, you can put it to another landing email server set up to actually act as a gateway and store email but bounce. Do bounce back so that you're keeping that potential registrant's email. You have all kinds of options this way because the language is loose enough. The only point that you're trying to do is get their attention.
at your discretion, at the registrar's discretion on how to do it, as long as they've interrupted the service in one way or another. And during those 8 days, while the service is interrupted, domain must be recoverable or renewable by the original registrant. So I think that's a fairly extremely flexible way to accomplish that goal. And, you know, we need to emphasize that it's still the registrar's complete right if they want to day one to delete the name or delete it day 20 or delete it in the middle of this 8-day period. It doesn't matter because upon deletion, you're still giving the registrar, you're still, therefore, once you delete, you put into RGP, you're disrupting the service at that point. The name actually is going dark at that point, and the original registrant has the original name holder has the ability to recover the name in RGP, so they still have a protection that's reasonable. And I think that was the balance point.
Thank you, Michael. A couple of comments on it. I like it in that it, I believe, based on our registrar survey, that no registrar would have to do anything particularly different from their normal business model to satisfy this. This doesn't say you can't darken it day one and keep it for 40 days, as some registrars do, because that meets the minimum requirement. And similarly, it allows someone to delete it as early as 8 days afterwards. I'd obviously like to see that longer, but... not quibbling over that at the moment. That meets that criteria. I only have one concern with it, and that is the term original DNS resolution path of the RAE. I'm a little worried that for registrars that also are web hosters, that under today's rules, if the page, if the site is redirected to a parked page or monetized page or whatever, that can be done without a DNS change because that can be done purely within the web server. And I want to make sure our wording covered that case.
I think it does, Alan.
Pardon me?
Yeah. Alan, this language absolutely, from a technical person's background, this language absolutely covers that. The requirement is to interrupt the original resolution path. Resolution path, by definition, is all the way from the top of the DNS hierarchy to the final A record. Okay, so this is an interruption of the resolution path, which would capture the situation you're talking about.
But if you have a web host, if
doesn't
the,
matter.
But this can be done without changing the A record. It's purely done within the web server.
No, but the registrar is required to interrupt the resolution path in this case, Alan.
Ah, okay.
Required.
Sorry. Okay, I was reading it backwards. I withdraw that comment. Thank you. James.
Okay. Hi, sorry. A little slow on the mute button. Okay, just a couple of comments, observations, and questions, but not before I thank Michael for putting this out there. It's very, I think, very concise. Please allow me to complicate it. So just first a suggestion when we talk about this 8-day period, and I want to borrow from a couple of country codes here a term that they use that I actually like, which is called quarantine. It's an idea that, and, you know, if you the Webster's or whatever dictionary, I think, says something about quarantine, where something is kind of held in isolation, so it can't interfere with or be interfered with. And I think that, you know, that's a good, rather than putting more acronyms into the ICANN alphabet soup, I kind of like the idea that we could synchronize some terminology around the idea of quarantine. The first question is, why 8 days? You know, how did we arrive at this number? I understand it's probably a decent compromise between 5 and 10, and if that's the answer, well, that's good enough for me, to be honest, at this point in the game. I just want to know if there was something we were aiming at when we were choosing 8 days. Go ahead and take a swing at that one, as long as I can keep my place in the queue.
That one's the easy one, James. There is something between 5 and 10 days. That's part of it. But logistically, it encapsulates a full week with 8 days. So,
okay.
You know, that's basically the logic. We are definitely a full week. If we say 8 days, we're giving them a full week.
And James, we weren't likely to get something more than 10 since 10 was what you were offering. Otherwise, I'll edge it up to 15 right now and make it 2 weeks.
Okay, so then the next question I had was relative to, I want to make sure I didn't lose my place here. Oh, yeah, I kind of referenced this or alluded to this on the email list, but if I'm required to give a 8-day concurrent period, suppose I, you know, jamesregistrar.com, decide that I'm going to have the last 8 days of the auto-renew grace period be my concurrent days. But I'm also allowed to delete the name at any time in that 45 days and not necessarily precluding a deletion within this 8-day period. So I could, as a matter of practice, say I'm leaving the last 8 days, but I'm deleting on day 2 of that 8 days. So in effect, I've gutted the intent of this policy in that I'm only allowing 6 days before I kick it over to RGP. Is that,
That's not a problem. Deletion is fine. Delete it like immediately upon expiration and take it to RGP. That's actually a fine option. I mean, it's maybe unfortunate for the sleepy registrant, but the important thing is, the important goal or the balance here is they still get a last-ditch effort to recover their domain, even if they're in RGP, and that's an important protection for them. I'm taking both sides. Equally important is the viability and the flexibility of the registrar's business model. Remember, guys, I'm the neutral party that's trying to see both sides here. So, if it's the right thing for the registrar's business model, delete it and go ahead. If what you're really trying to do is maintain that customer, retain that customer, then you can opt into doing the 8-day thing. And give them a last-ditch effort at it.
Okay. And just, before I let you go, just one other observation. From my perspective, and I think the perspective of some of the other registrars, but I don't want to presume that or presume to speak for them, but definitely I believe to the greatest benefit of the RAE, I think that those 8 days will have the largest impact if they are the first 8 days. Following auto-renew or following expiration. I just feel like the possibility that some registrar might hide those in the middle of that 45-day period or clip them short at the end with RGP, as we were discussing, I just think it has the possibility to be confusing if it's not the first 8 days. And so, therefore, I would just propose that we discuss that, and if it's something that other registrars aren't going to throw rocks at me for, maybe we should explicitly state that. So,
James, if the registrars can concur to that, I think we'd all be happy to see it be the first 8 days, if everyone's okay with that. If it doesn't, if consensus can't be built around it, then probably the way it stands still has very decent effectiveness, but I think
diminished quite a bit if it isn't the first 8 days. But that's just my own personal take on that.
Okay. Yeah, I think what it does is it still offers some protection to the original name holder, the registrant, even if they play around with it, they've either got to throw it into RGP, which again gives them an option to get the name back, or they have to go through the whole 8 days. They can't. If we all agree to do this as a PDP, then it can't be circumvented without someone willfully breaking their obligations. Which there'll always be people that potentially do that. We can't solve for that one. That's somebody else's job. I do think it has some effectiveness. Ideally, it'd be great if it was the first 8 days. I think that would be even more powerful. But you know, I don't think it's a showstopper. If you're volunteering to go forward with the registrars and discuss it and see if you can get consensus, that would be fantastic.
Okay. Well, thanks, and I'm hoping they're speaking. I'm hoping they speak up today.
So, okay, we're getting perils for close to running out of time, and Margie had her hand up for a long time. Let's go to her quickly.
I just have a question about the 8-day period. So it gets original DNS is interrupted, or if the registrant realizes they want the name back, do they have to wait the 8 days, or can that 8-day period be shortened so that they can get their, you know, basically pay and renew and get their site back to operating the way it was?
I would assume as soon as they pay or even say they're going to pay, it can be reinstated. But you're right, that needs to be clarified in the policy.
Yeah, because the way I read this was the opposite, that you'd have to wait 8 days, somebody waiting 8 days with no, you know, website might be a problem.
It's basically, right now, virtually every registrar, at least the majority of the large ones, interrupt service today. Whether they do it day one or day three or day five varies, or day 20. But what's being talked about here, my understanding, is exactly the same thing. Right now, if the domain is blacked out or is redirected to a parked page, as soon as you pay or as soon as you do whatever the incantation is the registrar wants, it goes back to your website.
Okay.
Mikey?
That makes sense.
Thanks,
yeah, this is Ron. Can I have a question?
Yeah, I'll put you in the queue.
Go ahead, Ron.
Thanks.
Go ahead. You want me to go, or you want?
Yeah, no, Mikey, start. I'll put Ron in the queue.
Okay. I love this. I think it's great. I want to thank everybody for hanging in there to get to this, and I hope we can finish it off. I think, to the extent that I introduced confusion by insisting on dark, that was my error, and I want to tip my hat to everybody who got past that, because that's not really what I intended. And I like this a lot. That's all.
Yeah, I'll take part responsibility for that. I use the term dark in my proposal, although I defined it as being interrupted or whatever. It still was the word that caught people's attention. Response to the to James's comment on it should be the first 8 days. If you go back way to an earlier version of this, many months ago, and the suggestion was that it be darkened no later than day three, and there was a lot of flack from some registrars and some registrants who, for business continuity reasons, wanted to keep the domain around longer and give a larger grace period and a larger opportunity for the registrar to find the registrant and not stop service too early. So that was why in later versions we had exceptions and things like that. And so I'm happy with it being happening immediately, as happens with most registrars right now, but there were some that objected to it very strenuously. Ron is next.
Yes, I'd like clarification on one point. The 8 days, is that mandating at the end of the 8 days that the registrar put the name in to delete, or is there still the current practice of approximately 30 to 40 days before the name goes into delete?
That's correct. So if I'm a registrar and I choose to apply those 8 days immediately after expiration, I would do this process from day one to eight. Once I'm on day nine, I can continue with the domain and whatever else my business model normally does with that domain throughout the rest of the auto-renew grace period.
As I understand it, it is silent. Therefore, the registrar can do whatever they want. Currently, Two Cows says we will give you 40 days. They darken day one and give you 40 days to renew, and this would allow them to do that.
I would suggest you stop using the word darken and use interrupt.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Interrupt. Thank you. I didn't even realize I said it. But some registrars interrupt immediately and give many, many days
this policy would allow them to do that. Some registrars darken, and after 10 days, they sell it unilaterally.
Interrupt.
Did I say darken again?
Yes, you did.
With me, if you can, or teleconferencely. Interrupt, and after 10 days or whatever number of days, they unilaterally sell it, or they delete it. All of those things are viable. They could even put the old site back up again at day 9, as if nothing had happened. I don't know anyone is going to do that, but they could. Michael, did I represent you properly?
Yep, they can do what they want. That's the idea, because we want to give protections with also allowing people equally. We want registrars to be able to have their viable business models.
Okay. Ron, anything else from you?
No, thanks for the clarification.
McKaylee and then Cheryl.
Let Cheryl go first.
Oh, how very polite of you, McKaylee. I appreciate that. I was on the call the whole time, but I dropped off the Adobe room. My screen went dark, and it took me forever to get back in, which is why I put my hand up when I did. I just wanted to say thank you very, very, very much on bended knee, Michael. And I'm very happy with the way this is heading. But if we can hear back from the registrars whether there is an impediment to it being in the first 8 days, let's find out about that as soon as possible. If not, I think this needs a real number and to be integrated as soon as possible. Thank you.
Just on that line, my intent was by the middle of this week to, or not middle, by Thursday, to have all of the other recommendations which we've been talking about that haven't been yet integrated in the proposal to be integrated, so we have the full set for our last two meetings. McKaylee.
Just going back to Cheryl, I think the with regard to the registrars, I think the some of the input that Michael has given has been incredibly helpful, and I'll echo Cheryl's comments. Thank you, Michael. Please, this is very good. I think we would have to discuss this and to see if there's something that we, as individual registrars, might have overlooked. Because, as you all know, and Basin says this a lot, and others will say this, I mean, there's a lot of different business models. Some of the things that some registrars may wish to do may strike me as being rather odd, but probably things that I do that they find quite odd. Mike, are you saying that you can't hear me?
Ah, there you go. Maybe you just hit your finger over the microphone.
Very faint, McKaylee.
Sorry. The thing, for example, with respect to, you know, the interruption of services on domains, when we were in Brussels, a registrar from somewhere in South America raised an issue because, you know, that the way they handle things with their registrants is very, very different. So, you know, it's not something we can rush into. I mean, hopefully we could discuss this, get some feedback, but obviously, it could have a big, nasty knock-on effect that I can't see. What's another reason why I'd raise my hand? Obviously, it's not that important, so I'll take it down again.
We have 9 minutes to go, and at this point, no hands.
Call it a job well done. And
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a question on the draft final report, because I think at the last meeting, some people indicated that they, you know, still wanted to send in some suggestions, and we spoke about, you know, some of the changes that people have suggested for the background section and actually including that in the notes. And I realize that actually those people that we're talking about that are not on the call, but does it make sense to send out another reminder to the list to see if people are still working on that so we can move forward on that part of the report as well? Or has anyone received any feedback from others that they're still working on it?
Well, I know I had some comments that I made in my comments on Oliver Hope's suggestions, and I think you made a similar one in terms of not changing the part that was
taken out of the issues report. Other than that, I think at some point we're going to have to assume that no one else has problems if they haven't commented. There'll always be a chance to alter it, in the very final report. I don't think we can wait too much longer since we only have two more meetings. The concept of a late in the week meeting has been essentially squashed, so that we have two more meetings, and I think the recommendations are going to take a fair amount of that. Not seeing any other comments, I assume we're going to have to go ahead with something like that. Marika and I, you and I were delegated to decide on exactly how we poll for consensus, and I think we need to talk about that very soon. Not today, obviously, but perhaps tomorrow. Anything else we need to break up, or do we leave with an opportunity for ending this meeting a few minutes early? After a very successful one, I thank you all. No other comments? Thank you all.
Thanks, Alan.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, gang. Great job.
Thank you, Michael. Bye. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Like she's
you. You're very welcome.
Thanks,
bye-bye. Bye.